The following is a production of Radio Free Women of Washington, D.C., an affiliate of the Feminist Radio Network. The majority of the female workforce has had to deal with many sexist attitudes on the job, ranging from the stereotypical Girl Friday image to the woman who can do nothing but clean offices after business hours. Many women-controlled businesses have been formed, creating jobs in which women learn and develop their full potentials. One of the most innovating of these new businesses is the Feminist Federal Credit Union in Detroit, Michigan, chartered in August of 1973, which was initiated by a group of Detroit feminists who saw the need for women to gain financial control of their lives. One such way the Feminist Credit Union is reaching that goal is by loaning money at low interest to women who are struggling to begin their own businesses and organizations. Throughout the country, other existing women's businesses include craft shops, painting companies, printers, automobile mechanics, a feminist restaurant, a women's radio station, and a women's record company. This Radio Free Women program is an interview with four women who are presently involved in their own businesses.
Radio Free Women is on the air. Our guests today are women who either individually or as a part of a group started businesses of our own. Sue Sojourner is the founder of First Things First, a female order house for books for women. Sue Sasser is an independent auto mechanic, and Barbara Relic and Pris Poe are members of the women's painting crew. And the purpose really of this show is to talk about some of the good things about starting businesses on your own as women and working together with other women, and also some of the hassles. But hopefully, you know, we'll encourage some women to go, you know, into businesses of their own after this. Barbara and Pris, why don't you start and tell us a little bit about the Women's Painting Crew?
Well, the Women's Painting Crew started originally a couple years ago of women who had been painting for a company, and they started doing freelancing on their own. It wasn't until this past April that we started getting things together to actually form a business with a permanent crew and starting all down the line, investigating what would be the best way for us to set up a business, whether it would be a partnership or a corporation. And it wasn't until about 2 months ago that we filed the incorporation papers. So we've been through the whole thing of all the legal problems, economic problems of having to have an accountant to be a corporation and things like that. With the crew, we've been through the problems of how big the crew should be, how do you get new women into it, how do you train new women. Basically, it's just been a lot of hassle since last April, and they're just beginning to go away now. We still have many problems in dealing with employment and how to stay away from the employer-employee type relationship, because that was not the original aim of the Women's Painting Crew.
I think another problem is business, keeping steady business, and that's because we get our business through regular advertising, through newspapers and things. We have to prove ourselves as women. Some people hire us as a fluke. Some people are very interested in what we're doing. Some people hire us as a challenge. But at this point, part of our employment problem in hiring other women is that we're not getting enough steady business. to do that.
None of you have other jobs. This is your source of income. Right.
There are four full-time people, and at this point we have two women who work as floaters, but they only want to work a certain amount of days a month, that they think of it as temporary employment rather than being on the full crew and taking on all the responsibilities of doing estimates and setting up jobs and going out and getting all the materials, the whole arrangement system.
But when you talk about employment of other women, that becomes a problem because of not knowing when you'll need six or maybe more. Or
you have to get a job that's big enough and long enough that it will pay salaries for more than four people. Mm. And the work for four people.
You also have to have a job that has enough work that is at the level that someone beginning could do. Because there's an awful lot of training that has to go into doing trim. And since we rely on custom work, we're doing something that most painters don't do. We're doing a custom job. Most painters are construction-type painters. They go in, they slap one coat on, one coat of enamel. They won't even think of doing a second coat of enamel. You can't pay them to do it because they can't charge as much for the second coat, yet they have to come back another day, and they want to make their profit and go. Mm-hmm. Whereas we will do the second coat, and the customers don't understand this. They expect that if they have a big paint company come in and do it, they're going to do a perfect job, and they don't. They don't clean up after the stuff from the old painters where paint was gotten on glass, on woodwork, etc. Mm-hmm.
And you really have to worry about your reputation as painters because you are women.
Right. Okay. Not only that, because that's basically how we're getting our jobs, is referral from people who like the work that we did before. Mm-hmm. So it just builds one on the other. We have to do a custom job, therefore we have to train the women that come into it to do as fine a job as the customer expects.
Mm-hmm. Right. What did you do before you got into painting? I mean, how did you get into painting?
Mm-hmm. Well, I worked in an office as a secretary file clerk, which was horrible. And I heard about it because I was working and living in at the Women's Center. And I just was interested and then got on a job and got started that way.
I kind of fell into it. I had worked my way up progressively, working in different jobs where I had more and more freedom to do my job and not have to worry about someone else giving me orders. And as I worked my way up, I despised taking orders from anybody. So therefore, I got to the point where I didn't want to work for anybody but myself. And at the end, I was doing some research stuff, which I did entirely on my own. And the last job that I had, it was a one-woman job. And I was only responsible to one other person who happened to be a woman also. And I figured I could never luck into that kind of situation again, so I went into the painting crew.
And you like what you're doing now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, success to you and next. How did you get into the auto mechanic business? I mean, women aren't supposed to know about cars.
Actually, I didn't know anything about cars about 2.5 years ago. And what happened was that I was afraid of my car, and I was afraid of being taken, and I couldn't stand it, and I was driving this car that was kind of an old junker, and it kept breaking down on me. And so I decided I had to find out what to do about cars. There was a community college near where I lived that had regular courses for auto mechanics, and so I decided to go to it. And once I'd taken a couple courses, I realized that I really liked it. I've always been into fixing things, you know, rewiring lamps and stuff like that. And I found that it was very, very satisfying to have something that was broken and then you fix it. You know, it's just, you know, it makes you feel like you're doing something socially productive.
Right.
So,
which is difficult in other lives.
It really is. So then I moved down here, got a job in a dealership as a line mechanic. And That was okay. The people in the dealership have always dealt with me squarely, given that I'm a woman. The men freaked out when they saw me walk in the door. The customers freaked out when they saw me drive their car in the shop, you know. But eventually everybody dealt with that. And I wouldn't say that it was bad working at the dealership. It just terrible not seeing any women all day. I mean, it was really terrible. So right now what I'm doing is I'm freelancing. And there's five of us who have rented a garage down in Chinatown. Two work on VWs. Three work on American cars. And right now we don't have any regular hours. People just call up. We make appointments. And I'm the only one who works during the week because everybody else has regular straight jobs. Because there's this problem, which is that until you build up a large clientele, you can't support yourself this way. And if I hadn't made a killing at the dealership, how could I support myself now? Right. So.
Well, the thing that gets me, and this is directed to all three of you, is that, I mean, I have these ideas about, you know, what, I know all these people that should work together, all these women that should work together somehow, but the thought of going into business or starting to do it is, it just seems overwhelming. But, you know, you've all done it.
Well,
I mean, it seems to me that,
it's overwhelming in a lot of ways, and you just have to figure out that you're doing something that you want to do and that there's always going to be problems in what you're doing,
right.
And you try to keep the hassle level down and stay sane. I mean, I must admit that I am getting much more compassion for businessmen and housewives. You know, I mean, I'd like to come home and not have to think about, I work at home, though, so it's kind of difficult to not, you know, but I'd like to have a drink at the end of the day, and, you know, all that whole syndrome of turning it off. You know,
I think one of the things working women need is a wife.
Oh, right,
is that they should be able to come home to a wife who has the dinner on the table, has the martinis mixed, and, you know, it's just clean sailing.
On one level, that's true. On another level, I'm really, you know, that really grosses me, because I do have a husband, too, who does take care of the kid more than half time, because I've been working with, you know, and it's really hard trying to set up a different kind of pattern, which is, you know, not making him into a housewife, which he's getting there sometimes.
Oh, we met a woman, Tyler, at the women's fair, and she has that same kind of relationship, and she quit for a while, and her husband told her to go back to work, because he had kept the house neater when she was working all day, and, you know, she came home at night and the whole bit, so that would make a good...
We don't have any problem with that, neither of us keeps answering neat, and there's 8 other adults that live there, so it gets a little bit...
But I agree with Sue, though. I have a lot more sympathy and empathy with small businessmen, because I think one thing to realize when you go into business for yourself is that it's almost 24 hours a day. You work more for yourself than when you're working for somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, we do estimates on weekends at night after work. And our weekends and every day is taken up with painting. But it's still worth it. It's definitely worth it because it's for yourself and it's for the women you're working with.
Yeah, and there's nothing like knowing that if you do a quality job, it's because you did it, mm-hmm. and you get the credit for it.
Right. Yeah.
But I think it should be brought out, though, that even though you may empathize a little bit more with businessmen, it's still much, much harder for a woman's business to get off the ground and to exist and to survive than some you know, little small businessman, you know?
Sure. There's all the problems related to where our heads are, where my head is in terms of whether I can do it or not, where other people's heads are, whether it can be done, from getting a loan, which all small business people have trouble getting, but still, you know, women are, you know, discriminated against in all ways. So it's the kind of business. I have difficulty talking about first things first as a business, because it differs from Pris and Sue, because it's I'm not using a skill that is obviously unrelated to the movement, the women's movement. I'm, working within the women's movement and directly. You know, I'm not just a woman in business, but I'm within a feminist business, and the business of first things first is like spreading the movement, or at least that's the way I think about it. And that runs into a whole lot of problems within the movement and with women in general, just because there has been a whole lot of flack raised up about whether feminist business are ripping off the movement, we're capitalizing on the movement, look at that, you're making profits from the movement. I mean, Sisterhood is Powerful is written, and then we get a percentage every time we sell it and all that. And those kinds of issues are raised, which, you know, we're dealing with different things. And I dealt for about the first 6 months with it being just my business, and I was just totally uncomfortable with it. And
that's what we run into, the same problems, because we call ourselves the Women's Painting Crew. Therefore, we should be for all women, and women should be able to come in and work temporary and make money as if we were a welfare agency for women, because of the fact that we use the word Women's Painting Crew. We're capitalizing on the fact that we're women.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, what we're ending up is that women has nothing to do with it. The fact that we're doing a quality job where other painting crews do not do a quality job.
I think that we differ, though, because I truly feel that, and I'm not saying that, I think what you're saying is valid for the paint crew, and that sounds true. What for the book business, or for First Things First, I really feel that what we're doing is trying to educate, you know, and we're trying to spread the word, and the book selling is a portion which allows us to do that, possibly. That's where the money comes from to do bibliographies, to do research. Our catalog, which looks very commercial and like a catalog for any specialized business, on the other hand, is a very, you know, people are using it in their women's studies courses. You know, we get all kinds of requests. It's an educational document. So that we've set up, and since June, have been trying to set up and for my head, as well as you know, I mean, the philosophy of it is important to me, and it's a not-for-profit educational corporation from which I hope to be drawing wages as opposed to pocketing profits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're still having difficulty doing this, but I'm hoping that's one of my legal problems that I'm hoping to work out, because we've been assuming that we're a not-for-profit educational corporation, and this, I think that's important within the movement. I do, you know, I think that women's businesses and commercial enterprises have a place, but I also think if you're not comfortable with that, you definitely should try to figure out a way to service the movement and be an educational service and be self-supporting and be giving and be supporting women
in
their work.
One thing that women might be neglecting to notice in the fact of what you're doing with your catalog, you are giving them free publicity. You are actually subsidizing a lot of things that would never, never be sold, because they would never be heard about except in a small little elite group. So with that catalog, you're subsidizing a lot of those publications.
Oh, certainly it's not only trying to educate a mass of women, but it's trying to promote women's literature and trying to promote women authors and women publishers, all the feminist publishers that we definitely try to list and push and you know, see. I really am trying to deal with, or hoping to figure out a way to get some kind of national distribution. We're working as a female order house, and so we have a network from all over the country writing to us, and hope sometime to be able to be offering discounts, say, to women's centers out there to be selling the books, so that, you know, we can become a larger distribution thing and not be just dealing with individuals and not just be having a store front, say.
How do you see a business such as the painting crew or auto mechanics fitting into the women's movement? You know, in other words, how how is it helping the women's movement, and do you see it as part of the women's movement, or is just a, you know, a means of individually supporting, you know, individual women?
I think it works in a lot of amorphous ways that are hard to see sometimes. Just by having a woman's crew going into a house painting, you know, you're in some ways raising the consciousness of the woman who is there. Mm-hmm. It's her house.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you're telling other women it can be done. We did it. If we did it, you can do it. You're providing alternatives for women. And in Sue's case, a lot of women will not take their cars to be fixed because they automatically think they're going to get ripped off. I have to drink a whole pot of coffee and smoke a pack of cigarettes before I can take my car into my Volkswagen dealer, because I know I'm going to get ripped off. I've been ripped off in the past. So if I can take it to a woman, I feel like I can take care of my own car myself.
I mean, sometimes I feel like the most important thing I do is give people a little piece of metal piece that they didn't expect to have. I mean, it's funny, like, even yesterday, some women brought their car in. They dealt with the men who live who work next door, and they were beginning to get hysterical, you know, and, like, just from having to deal with these people to find out where I worked. And I was just thinking how nice it is to, like, bring it into me, and, you know, and I do good work. And so when people get their cars back, they're fixed. And, you know, it's just, I mean, it's soothing for them as well as soothing for me to only deal with women. There's problems with it, though, too. I mean, it's part of the whole economic question. Because if I make my money off of women, because I like to fix women's cars. I'm not particularly interested in fixing men's cars, although I will fix anything when I need the money, obviously. Then I
would... roller skate, too.
Right. That's right. If they need a lube job, just bring them over. But there's a problem, because I would like to make nice money, you know? But on the other hand, who I'm making it from is my friends and, to use an old term, my sisters, you know? And so it's like it's a tricky question, because I'm both a business and a service, which I haven't fully worked out yet.
But I think there are a lot of problems involved when any woman sees herself as just a service.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And I think that when women have skills to offer, that they should definitely get paid for them and not feel guilty about it. You know, I mean, I would feel like if I went into a house to paint, and I was painting a woman's house, and I'm going to give her an estimate on what I think my work is worth, you know. And I can't feel guilty about that. I have a skill to offer. I should get paid for that.
Right, but I have some problems with that, too. I mean, it's not clear because, I mean, if you're dealing with single women or separated women or old women, I mean, they're not getting the economic income that men are, in a way.
There's a problem.
But, you know,
I would say that the hourly that I would regularly charge, say that's twice the hourly that this woman makes, then on the one hand, I want it, and on the other hand, it doesn't seem exactly proper. I think eventually what I'd like is to get paid hourly for hourly. You know, if you're a lawyer and you get however much lawyers get per hour, I'll take that for my work on your car, you know?
Yeah,
and if you work for $250, I'll take $250,
yeah.
You know?
Well, I wasn't trying to say that you should charge exorbitant prices.
Oh,
you know?
I know that.
that's really ridiculous.
What you are saying, I went to a woman's convention, sort of, it was the beginnings of attempting to set up a trade association among feminist businesses. And we were talking about all the problems that were related to being identified as feminists and as business people, business women, and the fact that we undercharged. You know, we basically have this thing that our work isn't worth, and you know, it's been drummed into us, and so we undercharge, we underprice ourselves, you know, and it's continuing in that cycle of underpricing, and you know, we're not worth anything because we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the whole self-concept thing. I totally agree with that. That you think, well, you know, like getting back to painting, my experience with that was that when I first started going and giving custom jobs, you know, it was like, my God, I really can't charge very much because I'm just starting and I'm not good, you know, when in reality I was good enough, you know, to do a good job, a decent job, you know. And of course I underestimated myself and the other women I work with, too. You know?
One of the neat things is that we've been kept away, not being in business, women, mm-hmm. have been kept away from the reality of what it takes to do a job,
yeah,
okay?
True.
So that we have this, because men's work has always been far away from us and not in our experience, we don't really realize that they do, one, a whole lot of shit work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a whole lot of repetitive stuff. 95% of almost anything is that.
Mm-hmm.
And we think we're doing it, you know? I mean, this isn't really what the work is. We have that whole thing of just not knowing that it takes 4 hours to unscrew something that you might not, you know how to do. And that men experience that same thing too, but from my experience, I've never watched, I've never had to be around men doing jobs. I've never been allowed to be around that. So we've got a distorted sense of reality about what it takes to do a job, and thus when we can't do a job immediately,
mm-hmm.
perfectly, we think, my God, you know. somebody else could probably do it better. And I don't think they can.
I think that's really true. I think that's been true for me a lot with what Cheryl said about when I first started painting, charging people. I think that women's movement has got to emphasize that women have to take themselves seriously, and part of that is working for themselves, being self-sustaining at a decent level. You know, so many of us have done volunteer work. The difference in the way I feel about myself now, working for myself, making a decent wage, and when I was volunteering at the Women's Center is incredible. And that's good, and at this point we're not, the movement or women's community doesn't have money enough to sustain a Women's Center without volunteer work or any kind of, a lot of organizations, but we should be getting paid for what we do, and so I don't feel guilty. I think that's how it relates to the Women's Center, to the women's movement, is an image of women and being self-sustaining and self-supporting. I think that's very important. And we even had one woman who was a very conservative Republican, a Nixonite, everything. Her husband worked for Nixon, who hired us to show her children different sex roles, which was really incredible to us. And I think that's a sign of something.
Thank you, Sue Sojourner, Sue Sasser, Barbara Relic, Chris Poe, Cheryl Smith, our engineer Chris Murphy. This is Radio Free Women. Be reproduced without the written permission of the Feminist Radio Network Incorporated. For further information, write the Feminist Radio Network, Post Office Box 5537, Washington, D.C. 20016. Just a little makeup music. Don't you lose it, 'cause life is just a ride.